Welcome back to the PYP, the Practical Youth Pastor. This is your host, Chris Hahn, along with...
Your co-host, Steve.
My mom listened to an episode the other day, and she's like, who is this Steve?
Who's that guy?
Steve Johnson. It's unimportant.
Yeah. It's about me, Mom.
Yeah. And we're back again with special guest, Jeremy Smith from Rethink 315. Jeremy, thanks for joining us again.
Glad to be back.
All right. So on this final, we've talked through different things about youth apologetics, and this one is the shotgun round, where we will ask Jeremy just different questions and different things about himself, his ministry, life, and further deeper onward. So Jeremy, question number one, who did the 12-year-old Jeremy want to be?
Oh, wow. 12-year-old Jeremy probably wanted to be either Axl Rose, the lead singer of Guns N' Roses.
Wow, yeah.
Or at the time, Ray Barbie. He was a skater for the Bones Brigade. He was an African-American skater, and to this day, still one of my favorite skateboarders.
Wow. Okay, next question. What is a saying or a quip that's really affected your life in a positive way?
So like a saying or a quip, huh?
Yeah, or something a mentor has said to you.
So a counselor once told me, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy?
Ooh,
But here's the terrible part. I said, well, being right makes me happy. So what do you do with that?
Yeah.
Be afraid of how much they love me.
Man, how long ago was that?
That was maybe 2014.
Awesome. Most influential author right now for you?
Personally, just in this moment, and this is, you know, more like fun stuff than work related, although those overlap sometimes. I'm just a big fan of Frank Herbert. I think that Herbert did for science fiction what Tolkien did for fantasy. And that is, and by the way, Frank Herbert wrote Dune, which, you know, has just recently been made into a really good, I think, movie.
Yeah.
B+, strong B+. There have been a couple movies that have been made, but I read Dune when I was 17, and it was really just paradigm shifting. So I like Herbert a lot. I don't agree, of course, with everything that he says. Like I can tell you that, you know, I love Dune. That doesn't mean that I endorse every word that's ever come out of this man's mouth.
Sounds like you do.
You know, yeah, right. But I really enjoyed that book. I read every single book in the series. I wish that he would not have died before it was over. I read a couple of the books that his son did. I even read a couple of his, you know, non-Dune related sci-fi books. And I think he's probably the most influential writer for me in this moment. But that's just this moment. I read a lot.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Question, is Chicago deep dish pizza a bigger deal than St. Louis barbecue?
Oh, gosh.
Right? These are the two delicacies from your two homes. What's a bigger deal? And now, by the subsequent question to that, I don't just mean which one do you like more. I'm saying which is more worthy of the legend that surrounds it.
Yeah, so I would say deep dish in Chicago is more worthy of like the legend that surrounds it, or the mythology,
sure,
if you will. But I will say too, and this has nothing to do with barbecue, has everything to do with a style of pizza that is native to St. Louis, and that is the thin crust provolone cheese. Basically like a cracker with cheese and meat, and it's called Emo's, and it's delicious. This is pretty funny. My daughter-in-law just busted in on our interview here.
Well, you have a daughter-in-law?
She's walking home from school.
Time out.
Huh?
You have a son of marrying age? You didn't mention that earlier.
wait, what did I say?
You said your daughter-in-law.
How south is St. Louis?
You're 43. I guess it's possible. So your daughter-in-law's so there.
I do that all the time. I'll call my mother-in-law, like my stepmom. I, sorry about that. I meant my stepdaughter. I should just say my daughter, yeah, but yeah. She's at the age where she's like, now my dad and my stepdad are different.
I didn't see that curveball coming. So the answer is St. Louis pizza? that is an M. Night Shyamalan twist.
It's an acquired taste, but it's thin crust, provolone cheese. You know, you pick your meat, but Emo's Pizza in St. Louis is... I am a convert, man. I love it.
When you're feeling sad, nothing like Emo's.
All right, and next question. The Office or Parks and Rec?
Definitely The Office.
Oh, my gosh.
Although
thank
Parks
you.
And Rec did grow on me over the years.
Buddy, thank you. I was holding my breath for a split second. I was like, how I view this man
is going to really hinge on this. You could have asked a harder question and said the UK version or the American version, but... That's maybe a little too esoteric for your listeners.
No, hold on. My turn. What do you say? The unintelligible, forced British version or the superior American version? What do you prefer?
Definitely the American version, but I wanted to sound slick.
Yeah. No, I promise you. People like to say the other answer, but you're a genuine man. I'd definitely like to talk more about that sometime.
I like the way that the American version ended better than I do the British version.
You mean not two weird seasons?
Like,
and you can't understand because it's not in Cockney. Anyway,
we did have to put the subtitles on.
Yeah,
for that.
I'm sorry, I just can't.
It was still funny.
Although we do know Jeremy's he's a big Peaky Blinders fan. For those of you who can't see him, which is everybody but Chris and I, he does have on a Peaky Blinders hat. It looks kind of cool.
Yeah, little known fact too. I sewed a razor blade into the brim here.
Oh, wow.
So if I ever got into a fight with a bunch of guys in an alleyway. Yeah, I could slash their eyebrows.
Now that's practical.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Well, what do you think a Peaky Blinder is?
I don't know.
It's a weapon. It's a weapon. It's a weapon in your hat, and when you slash it across someone's forehead, it blinds them because they got blood in their eyes.
Okay.
It's hard for them to kill you when they can't see.
Part of me was excited when you took that hat off that I was going to see blonde dreadlocks. Just something that I would have never expected. Like, how sick would that have been if when he took his hat off to give us that lesson on Peaky Blinders, he has just, like, cornrows. The blonde cornrows.
Even better.
Well, you are non-denom. All right, so let me ask you this. What is a philosophical question because obviously the apologetics is removing the obstacle. What is a philosophical question about our faith that you still really struggle with, no matter how much you've dug into it?
Oh, good one.
Oh, that's... Yeah, man. I mean, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil mm-hmm. was something that we were not allowed to partake of. And who knows, you know, maybe there would have been a point in time where God would have like slowly introduced this knowledge or allowed for us to know. I don't know. Right. If the garden was so good, you know, why was there a snake in it? And why was there this pre-existent knowledge of good and evil? This fruit. And I don't know if this is literal, if this is more, you know, allegorical. I'm not sure. Either way, I think it's a true story. And what is it about evil, man? Like, I know that in some ways God is not directly responsible, and yet there are these sort of indirect implications by way of being an omniscient, omnipotent being.
Yeah.
and Satan is a created being, and God knew what he would do. God knew that the angels would rebel. It's interesting. You know, there's this little throwaway line and I think it's in first or maybe second Peter where he says angels long to look into the gospel. And I always just blew by it. And then one day I was reading it and I don't remember what else was going on in my life, but it occurred to me that the angels rebelled. And I'm going to answer to your question, but it occurred to me that the angels rebelled and they were judged. And that was the end of the story for that, you know, that third of this population of beings, right, that were aware and had characteristics that were in some ways kind of like God. They weren't image bearers the same way we are, but these were intelligent beings with feelings and self-awareness and all of that. And they were judged because they sinned, they fell. There was this rebellion that happened even before the garden, right? And yet there was no atoning sacrifice for them. And God was no less good for not becoming one of them and living the existence that they should have lived and then, you know, dying the death that they deserved and all of that. Like, there's no gospel for the angels. Right. There's only justice. And my question is, you know, like, where does evil originate? You know, does it originate in Satan's actions? Does it originate in the mind of God? Those are just hard questions to answer, right? Like, I think that's sort of that philosophical sort of stump you. It doesn't shatter my faith. I mean, I'm perfectly content with a God who does with his created things whatever he so desires, right? Like, I think that he has that prerogative. And I also believe he's good. I believe he's demonstrated his goodness to us in a multitude of ways. The law, the prophets, you know, but not least of which, and, you know, the death and resurrection of his son, right? And then my own story even. But God can be good and still allow for or even ordain things that we don't prefer. And I guess this question of evil, like, where did that originate? I mean, it's interesting that we even talk about it, right, to this day. Like I said earlier, I think it was in the last episode where, you know, this number one question that always pops up is, you know, why suffering and evil? And I think it's funny that all these centuries later, right, generations later, from the first people to us here today with our technology, we're still, like, screwed up by this question. And that knowledge wasn't even really for us. We stole it, in a sense. And here we are. We're still, like, butting up against it and wrestling and grappling, and it's in some ways it's like it's injuring us because we can't know the answer. Well, maybe we weren't not supposed to know it at all. And so that, I think, is that philosophical question that really stumps me. But it's not the kind of thing that creates any sort of faith crisis. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think God's resume, right, is good enough that I know, you know, there's answers to it, but here's what the answer can't be. It can't be that he doesn't love us or that he's somehow malicious, right?
Right.
There's no room for that in the bigger story. The resume doesn't leave room for that. But it's definitely, you know, it is a questionable aspect of the resume. Like, hey, why is this discrepancy between, you know, your experience here and your experience there? And what was this 10-year gap? What were you doing for that 10 years, huh? Like, that's the sort of, you know, like, question mark on God's resume is the evil. Where did evil come from? But it doesn't negate the rest of the resume. Sorry, long answer,
no,
short question.
It's a much mm-hmm. better answer. Chris's go-to apologetically, he's always asking the question of, is God so powerful that he could create a rock that even he couldn't lift?
Oh, that's a great
question. And I'm like, Chris, dude, that's kind of his big one. So I was excited to hear a much more in-depth, more thoughtful answer out of Jeremy.
Want to know. No, but I mean, just a follow-up to that, Jeremy. You work with a lot of kids and have through the years. Like, so when a kid seems to be just stuck on one particular topic, let's take that topic because it's an extremely common question, and they seem just stuck on it, how do you guide or walk with a kid who just seems to be stuck on something? Do you tell them, hey, maybe put this in your backpack and traverse forward in your faith, and every once in a while when you have time, take it out and look at it and observe? Or, like, how do you walk with a kid that's wrestling with a pretty weighty, heavy topic like that? Where do you
go? I mean, so every kid's different. So I don't really have like a go-to answer. I think that, and by the way, so my job is a little different than youth pastors. I probably spend more time with pastors and parents and youth pastors than I actually do with kids.
Mm-hmm.
I have a handful of students that I will sort of, you know, take under my wing, and I'll try to help them to become better leaders. But I can't, you know, I can't be there for every kid, and I'm not a youth pastor, so I don't even have access to students as often as youth pastors do. But, you know, in those situations where I've had like an ongoing relationship with some maybe outstanding kids or kids that pursued me a little bit. And I was privileged enough to be trusted in this kind of space with them where they're sharing doubts and they're asking me hard questions and giving me permission, you know, to speak in. I think every kid's a little bit different. For some of them, it's just not being surprised or freaked out or worried or aggressively countering all their objections. For others, it is not even the real question. Like, there's maybe questions underneath those questions. You know, a pastor in New York, well, I'll just say his name. You guys all know Tim Keller. And again, here's another one of these guys where it's like, I love a lot of what he does. Don't agree with everything, but you eat the meat, spit out the bones. But Keller once said that, you know, when students would go off to college and come back to his church and they'd say, you know, I just don't trust the reliability of scriptures, this reason and that reason and this and that and this, Keller would look him in the eye and say, so who are you sleeping with? And he said that this was, you know, like, this was 9 times out of 10 the motivating force behind this deconstruction, right? That it was more about, well, the Bible says I can't do X, Y, Z, so
yep.
If I get rid of the Bible, then I yep. can make an excuse. And again, that's not every kid. I would never say that every kid with a doubt is just trying to sleep with somebody. That's not helpful. But in some cases, that's what's going on, right? So that's the question under the question. A good friend of mine, Jason Wilkins, he teaches worldview at a Christian school, a big Christian school here in town, and he's got one that I've been using a little bit lately too with certain types. Even if they're in a deep, dark place, Jason will say, okay, so, and let's say that they're in a faith crisis and they're kind of ready to walk away and maybe they're not sure it's true. Jason will say, okay, so it's not true. What now? Like, what if it isn't true? Like, where do you go from here? Like, where is your identity? Where's your basis for objective morality? Where, and you know, that's kind of a technical question, but I think the right question is, well, what now? Where do you go from here? And then just listen, right? Like, where are they looking for affirmation or identity or belonging or, you know, what are those identity anchors that they're trying to pick up and drop in other places, right? And and I think it kind of harkens back a little bit to, you know, Peter, right? Like, you know, where else would I go?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Where else would I go? You're the one, like, you're it, you're everything. Even if I wanted to leave, like, where else would I go? I remember going through in my own life this, you know, faith crisis of sorts. I didn't question God's existence. I didn't question the divinity of Jesus or the resurrection or anything like that. But I was really questioning, like, vocation and purpose and identity in that. I went, Chris, you know some of my story, but, you know, I went through this unwanted and unexpected divorce. And at the time, it was like losing a limb. And, of course, now, like, I didn't choose it, but God worked it out in a glorious way. And I love my wife and my family, and it worked out so well. But at that time, it was really hard. And then my favorite church in town, the place where I really cut my teeth, it tanked. And the pastor was asked to leave. And if I mentioned the name of it, you all would know it. And then later that pastor took his own life. And, man, so, like, and excuse me, I'm sorry, like,
no, don't
talking
apologize.
About, you know, identity anchors and pastors killing themselves. And then Chris, you might remember, I hurt my knee and mm-hmm. tore my ACL and I couldn't walk for like almost a year. And, you know, being like a skateboarder, that was just a big, again, identity anchor. And all these things were sort of taken from me in a short period of time. And even vocationally, just having these big questions. And I remember there was this moment or two or maybe 10 where I was like, man, I wish I could just hop on this deconversion bandwagon. You know, I wish I could just say, none of this worked for me. and I'm going to do something else. You know, I'm going to be the ex-evangelical and be, you know, accepted by the masses and maybe, you know, get a podcast or a blog going or whatever. Like, and then it was just that question that my friend Jason asked his students, that I've asked a couple students, that even, you know, Peter asked Jesus, where else would I go? Like, I couldn't get away from this if I wanted to. Like, I couldn't. There's no way I can stop believing that Jesus rose from the dead, no matter how much I wanted to believe something else. And I have wanted to believe other things for all kinds of reasons. Yeah. It would have been very helpful in certain ways, right? To just not be a Christian. And so where else would I go? Like, and so, you know, I ask, like, what do you say to kids? And I think that lately that's been a really powerful go-to for me. Like, okay, well, what if what you're proposing is true? Well, what now? What makes racism wrong? If we're all just animated meat responding to stimuli, might make right? Why doesn't majority rule? Why don't the strong eat the weak and prey on the weak and oppress the weak? Like, okay, so follow it out, right, to its logical conclusion. Like, what now? Where will you go? What if that's true? Yeah. Now what? I think that's a really jarring question. Yeah, I think that it's a real – well, I think that's a very good question to ask. I'm thankful for my friend Jason, and I know him personally, and he's had to ask that question even in his own moments, right? And I think it's a powerful – powerful question.
Yeah. Well, Jeremy, thanks for joining us. Where can people find you? How can they look you up?
They can find me in my car in my driveway doing podcasts with you guys.
Yeah. That's where they can find with your daughter-in-law.
Yeah. Her. I can't believe I said that. I hope you guys edit that.
We don't edit anything.
We don't. In the 12-year-old girl demographic, we have a zero. So she's not even going to know.
So there you go. Yeah.
She is my beloved stepdaughter, in whom I am well pleased.
There you go.
All right. So, rethink315.com is the best place. And it's not hard to find me and our operations director and our board of directors and our advisory board, or maybe some of the speakers that we lean on. Go to the website. That's the best place to find me, or to find events that we're doing, or to just get some resources or get in touch.
That's awesome.
Jeremy, it's great to have you.
Yeah,
good to see you.
Thank you so much, man.
Love the beard. I'm envious. Appreciate it.
It is a good beard.
It is.
I grew it myself.
I appreciate that. But yeah, so if you have, like he said, look up Rethink 315 on the World Wide Web. Thank you for specifying that earlier, too. But yeah, if you have other questions or things, or you want contacts to different people in your town, and maybe Steve and I or any of our friends know, please do email us at thepracticalyouthpastor@gmail.com. We'd be glad to do that. Steve, thanks for joining me today.
Chris, thanks for letting me be a part of this.
Jeremy, thanks for having you. Thanks for being on the show and letting us have you on here for 3 weeks in a row. I appreciate that. So, see you guys later.
I see you.
Glad to be here. 3 weeks in a row.